time for The Daily Review, a podcast dedicated to reviews and discussion of TV, movies, and books. Look for us at Daily Review on Facebook and Twitter and dailyreview.com on the web. That's DaleyReview.com.
This is Paul Daly here with my wife, Caroline.
Hey, guys.
And we're here to discuss the episode of Spike TV's The Mist called...
The Law of Nature.
This didn't have what I'd call a straightforward definition. We normally take things and look them up on the internet, and if it's not immediately obvious what it means, and try to come up with some way to relate that to the show. All the definitions we found related to human nature, or more like the rights and laws that we as humans believe are just inherent to our role on this planet. And that didn't seem to work for this episode. What do you think, Caroline?
No, I agree with you. The definitions we found definitely didn't match what my gut instinct was that the law of nature is. For me, I feel like law of nature is very survival of the fittest and more like there's a natural order to things and like a more organic sort of feeling about nature. Like there is a rhyme and reason to everything that happens in nature. And there is a balance, predator, prey, that type of thing. And so all that stuff that we had found when we look up the law of nature, it was like everything about like our rights as humans and everything. It was like, what? I just don't think that's what this meant. So I'm going with more Natalie's commentary in the church, which was about like this was all about restoring order and the balance of the planet, basically.
Almost like if you took those definitions of natural order that then got back to human rights, but then applied them to a higher power, that being nature, then you'd have the right definition, according to Natalie and the show. Nature has its own right to clean its own house.
Yeah, very true. And that was Natalie's entire story this go-round. She was like so irritated at her churchgoers who, you know, really were looking at her as like, you're the one that came back from the trial by ordeal, you know, untouched. So you must be the one who understands, you know, what is going to happen. What is the miracle? When she turned around and said that the Black Spring was the miracle, how did you feel about that?
It's funny. The way that she approached her post-ordeal was ironically a lot like a fire and brimstone preacher. She wasn't talking about, you know, damnation and your eternal soul rotting in hell and stuff like that, but she was throwing things in their little, you know, wide-eyed faces that sounded equally damning to all of them.
Well, definitely, and like judging them, you know?
Yeah, right.
For sure. And so in that damning kind of way, I definitely agree that there was that like, you guys better do what I say or else kind right. of feeling to it. And that was like shocking to me. I know we said many a podcast now that any amount of power immediately leads to corruption. And I feel like that is just tenfold in this episode. We see it so many times play out. I felt like when Connor tried to tell his story and express why he was breaking down, everything about it felt very Circle of Life when he explained, you know, he had been a single dad with Jay, which I did not realize that Jay had been like a baby when his wife had passed away and that he had raised him this entire time. And then when he revealed that he had actually been raised by a single father, it felt very like cyclical, you know, that felt very, you know, this order of nature and everything sort of having a rhyme and a reason and a cycle to it, if you will. I was really surprised at how Natalie twisted and turned his story into something that she wanted him to do. That
to manipulate
felt,
him, right.
Yeah, that felt so Romanoff, right? Like, it just felt like the whole portion where he asked her, how do you deal with loss? How do you get through it? And he asked point blank to her, how are you dealing with the loss of Benedict? She didn't answer him. She went like completely almost like robotic, you know, just blabbing the same jargon that she'd been giving.
Generic, answer, which is funny again, because she just kind of beat the church at its own game, but she gives a very church like what's meant to be is meant to be.
Well, you know, and restoration of order, and didn't even listen to what he asked and like relate to him as a person, just completely turned it on. I mean, they both have lost their spouses. You would have thought there was a legitimate moment to be had there where she says something about how she deals with loss. But it was very much like she just used his grief in that moment to twist it around to get what she wanted him to do done. And that felt awful, really awful. She felt like a husk of her former self. I'm kind of wondering if this is still Natalie.
You think there's a possession type situation here?
I am really not feeling like this is Natalie anymore. I mean, the original, you know, let's find the little spider Natalie to this Natalie now, where she's saying you need to go kill your son. And she tells those churchgoers, she acts like it's like an option to go with them. And, you know, they say, we're really sorry, we're just too scared to go. They didn't say like, we don't believe you or anything. They're just like, we're freaked out. We feel like we need to stay put. Maybe even we're not as strong as you, Natalie. We feel like we need to stay here. You go fight the good fight and like we're going to cheer you from afar. When they like jammed that cross through the handles, did you realize what they were going to do?
No. Well, we saw them spreading around the, was it gas or was it just wine or just an accelerant, let's just say. It was clear they were going to set something on fire. And then, yeah, I guess I did. And that's just extra irony, because I guess it's like, if you're going to take refuge in the church, then let the cross be the thing that dooms you, you know?
Yeah, that literally holds you back.
Right.
But to burn all those people alive, I mean, that's
too much.
Shocking.
That's irredeemable. Going through the ordeal and coming out the winner, that's one thing. But burning a church with people in it,
That's psycho.
Okay, now you're nuts.
Now I just don't know what to think. And in addition to that, them heading all the way down into the church basement with this plan that Connor is absolutely certain that Jay did rape Alex because he raised like a bad seed son, right?
Right.
And so the only way to restore order and the only reason why the mist rolled in is because Jay raped Alex. And so therefore, Connor's got to go kill him with his own hands. Like, this is all on Dad to go deal with. The fact that they just like went down to the church basement and like opened up this underground tunnel.
Sure.
Was like,
where'd this come from?
What? And like, does this go like, I mean, directly to the mall?
You lived in the Northeast. Do you remember playing in the catacombs underneath the churches up there?
You know what? That's not really a New England like playtime kind of situation. No, I'm not like, hey guys, let's go.
Is that more of a secret kind of thing or like a not existent kind of thing?
I have no idea. I have never seen what appeared to be like a manhole in a basement anywhere. I honest to God, I have no idea what that was, why it was there, why they didn't talk about using it well before now.
Right.
Everyone who would have known the church, Link, Romanoff, they were all dead. So who would have suddenly known this thing existed?
Connor went looking and he said he found the way out. But, you know, also, if you remember, Connor's the one that threw Mia and the gang into the basement. Which,
oh, super weird.
How many basements does this place have?
Super weird. I don't even understand that. So very suspect. The Mist as a show has actually done a pretty decent job of, even when the reasons may be a little thin, they typically give a reason for something. There isn't suddenly an underground tunnel that hasn't been ever talked about, ever revealed, that we never saw the discovery of. It was just like in a montage with the other endings of the other stories with the music playing. They just revealed that there was a tunnel.
Sure hope you're right, that sometime in the future we're told that the tunnel relates to some anticipation maybe of the church leader needing to escape this, you know, the black mist.
Oh, shit. Or, you think it's something that direct?
Well, I mean,
I was thinking maybe like a natural disaster, like possibly it was for like a flooding kind of situation or something of the church, like a drain kind of situation. I don't know. I mean, none of it makes sense to me at all. That's what I'm saying. Like, so far, they've actually done a pretty decent job of coming up with reasons for things, even more so than I expect in an average like horror movie kind of situation. Sometimes you just have to say, you know, I suspend my belief, whatever, it's fine. I'll just accept that there was a tunnel under the church the whole time, mm-hmm. you know, fine. But they hadn't been doing that in the show. For the most part, they had been telling us some reason for something. Mm-hmm. We have this idea now, like embedded in the churchgoers, that this was all about nature. This was coming for us because the humans did wrong and that's why it's here. But we still have that arrowhead concept out there that like, right. maybe this wasn't anything about, nobody knew anything about your sins.
No. I think she is not right about any of it. There is something else that happened. It would be like in Stranger Things, right? If the townspeople in Hawkins were convinced that the boys playing Dungeons and Dragons created a rift in reality, when in fact it was completely Hawkins Labs. The boys had nothing to do with anything.
Right.
But they needed to crucify the boys
in a religious way.
To set this right.
Right. In a religious backed way. So I mean, I get it. Everybody's sort of coming at it from their own, for their own reasons.
It reminds me of The Leftovers in Miracle, right? How all the townspeople are convinced that they were spared because of these certain things that they did during the moment of the departure. So they just keep doing them. If it's wearing a wedding dress, it's wearing a wedding dress. If it's killing a goat, it's killing a goat.
Yeah. And in addition to that, like there was also that group of people who believed that they were left behind, like that they had not been the good people. The good people were taken, you know, by God to say, yay, you got to go to heaven. And the rest of you were not chosen to go. So there was like a sadness that they were like the not picked people.
Right.
And so it was like there's lots of rationales for these things that's basically, if you guys haven't watched The Leftovers, you should absolutely watch it. We didn't reveal anything.
Best show on television.
If you haven't watched it, definitely take a look, because it absolutely examines all these different perspectives that you could have on an unexplained situation and how the human mind will do really wild tricks to try to come up with reasons when no reasons are apparent. And that's basically what we end up here with all these different groups of people. Everybody's coming up with reasons that are vastly different. I made the best decisions and conclusions that I could at the time with the information I had. And each of our groups have very different information. Mm-hmm. And so we end up with this like very different motivation for each of our groups. Basically, that was our church group this time. I mean, they're all gone. And we have finally a reason. I had no idea what would lead them to want to go to the mall. You know, we were all like, why would they go to the mall? What would make them have to head that way? But now, all right, some sort of restitution, and then that's going to somehow stop the mist.
So we're down to Natalie, Connor, and a couple miscellaneous red shirts.
Yeah.
The rest were killed. And we now have a Connor who is
kind of possessed.
Well, he is manifesting a very familiar king-type character where they are controlled by someone else. They accept what they're being told, and they accept that for their new role in life. And they're willing to kind of forsake whatever came before in order to fulfill this new role. And this new role of restoring order on behalf of Natalie's version of the law of nature. I'm not sure how far that's going to go. If that's going to mean like killing his own kid to set things right, or what do you think?
This is a big thing to put on the table, but I think I'm going to do it. I think I'm going to do it, Paul. I do think he's going to kill Jay. I do think it's actually going to happen. And it's going to be revealed that wasn't necessary and he didn't have to do it. And it was unrelated because maybe this arrowhead thing is going to come to light. But I do actually think he's going to do it.
Spoiler, if you haven't seen the movie, but that would be a really more expert twist to what was presented in the movie than I would have given the show credit for.
Initially, but I feel like they've done a good job actually doing a lot more twists and turns than I saw coming. I mean, I felt like the first couple episodes were pretty straightforward, and it really took us until that episode where, was it about episode 4 or 5? That was like where we had like the backstory of Eve.
Yeah. That was maybe.
And so it took about 5 until I was like, okay, I feel like there is complete potential here that the writers and the storytellers here are going to be able to twist up the information in a way that these reveals are going to get like more and more and more exciting. You know, the beginning was pretty straightforward, kind of plodding through, you know.
Almost standard.
Yeah, yeah. But I felt like they did a great job of actually starting to really, I mean, stir the pot. There is some crazy crap that happened this episode. We were live tweeting on Twitter with everybody, and I felt like everybody was like, what? I mean, after about 5 or 10 minutes of the episode, I think every single GIF I saw was like people being like, what? Right. OMG, like just over and over again. So I do feel like initially I was with you that like, I don't know if this show has the layers and the
meat.
Well, the complexity to like, or to want to make the story that complex. Uh-huh. Like, it's a weird, crazy story to begin with. A mist rolls in. It's all weird. People are doing weird things. What's in the mist? There was already something there to that. But to actually now twist it all up with like how the characters deal with the mist and how different groups are coming at it from all these different angles, I feel like it's really become complicated and twisty and turny, and you really don't know what's going to happen next. So let's talk about our mall friends. So now that we have the church group heading to the mall, we have the mall group, specifically our mall rat side of it. They are being monitored with that baby monitor,
yeah,
by Eve and Kimmy. And I thought that was, again, smart, like an extra layer that was like, it didn't have to happen. As viewers, they could simply show us what Gus was doing. They didn't have to show us Eve and Kimmy were actually listening in on those conversations. I thought that was a cool added layer. What did you think?
I liked that we kind of called why some of the reasons were that they might be needing to monitor. They found out that they were going to start sending out search parties. I can only imagine that that would go badly. Some of those search parties are going to say, let's search the other camp.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So finding that out ahead of time, hiding your shit or moving your shit or something, or making, I would probably leave a little bit of shit there. So there's something to find to be like, oh, you found all our shit, but then move most of it.
Yeah.
Someplace else.
I completely
not the loading
agree.
Dock.
Not the loading deck. I completely agree. So if you guys remember, with those flyers, there was this false hope that the National Guard and people, the State Guard, it said, were coming to save everyone. So now there's been this complete upheaval about rations and like how much should anyone be eating and is it okay for everyone to just gorge themselves now? And the realization that like, oh, crap, like, this guy decided to have like a Thanksgiving dinner and like this person's still over here rationing. And then that got everyone super pissed. So there became this scavenging for food. Now that's like sort of what the main group is doing, right?
Right, yeah.
But
our Gus's group.
Main person that we need to focus on of the mall rat group is Shelly, because she really sets the apple cart in this situation.
That's fair to say. Yes.
So Alex and Jay.
or what is it? Overplays her hand.
Yeah, yes. So Alex and Jay, really in that teenage horror movie kind of way, managed to find a way to divert all their attention from the seriousness of everything and instead rollerblade a bit.
And really, they are kids. I mean, I know that that's on the one hand super dumb. They should not really. I mean, if you're in rollerblades and some shit goes down,
yeah, right,
you are not ready to respond to uh-huh. anything, you know? So that's not really great from a safety standpoint, but they are kids and, you know, attention spans are what they are in kids. So they rollerblade and Shelly cannot see Alex enjoying her life ever again.
And I think specifically, like, she's having this memorial for her daughter and she's trying to have like a moment of silence. And it's that silence is broken by laughter and kissing and like shrieks of like, that is the part where I'm like, oh, yeah, I mean, that would get right under your skin right away. You'd lose it real quick. Plus the kissing thing, though. I mean, were you pretty shocked that Alex is kissing Jay? She accused him of rape.
Yes.
I mean, she actually had to have a rape kit done at the hospital.
She seems like a normal kid. I don't know. Do normal kids move emotionally that fast from, you know, feeling scared and helpless around this person to needing to make out with them in just like a couple of days?
You probably could in words. Like she probably could have said something like, you know, I feel like this happened and just kept it to words. And then her mind gets changed over the course of this amount of time with him. But there was more than words. Like she went to the hospital. She had a doctor's examination. She had blood work done. She had like, it was so much more than just like telling a story and then having the person sort of convince you that that story wasn't really what happened, whatever. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like she had to go to a doctor who was going to give her Valium, and she had to go to the pharmacy, and they had to pack all their bags, and they were going to move from the town for some period of time, you know, with Eve's family. To me, those parts were like, I can't imagine having to go through a rape kit at the hospital, Paul.
You know, in TV logic, I could probably see that progression being made justified in a 22 episode season.
Yes.
But a 10 episode season means you have to compress all those little moments where Jay redeems himself that makes him probably not the rapist in her eyes into an episode or two. And all of a sudden, the logic breaks. You know, that's too fast.
It is to me. And it makes Alex feel not like somebody I want to root for. Like the fact that, you know, she is being made out to be a liar. I don't think she's a liar per se, because she was given the information by Adrian, by her best friend. This is what I saw. This is what happened. So I don't think she's lying. She was assaulted. They did have a rape kit. They did say there were drugs in her system. So everything that she said is not a lie, again, based on the information she had at the time. She came to a conclusion, right? Mm-hmm. It isn't irrational or make her a liar that she said these things. The stuff that bothers me is that there really wasn't any new information that came to light. Like Jay didn't give any compelling new information that would have dismantled the story she told herself. You know, so I know he said, I just put a blanket on you and then I went downstairs or something. I wish there had been some additional facts that had been presented from him that somehow twisted up the information enough to be like, okay, I have a window of doubt here. There's like a little bit of room for me to say, maybe it isn't exactly what happened. But it's like he never defended himself in that way. He just defended himself by saying like, I'm sick of you saying that.
So you're saying it's possible that your rapist could also save you from a fire? Like those two things are not mutually exclusive?
Yeah, because I don't think in the case of rape, It supposedly this is what I understand of it. It is not a situation where that person wants to necessarily hurt you, kill you, that type of thing. It's control. It's power over someone else. That scenario of him setting the fire and being a hero could have also been a scenario of controlling someone else, having power over someone else. You know what I mean? Like, so that could look similar, like your motivation could look similar. Now, I agree, and I think most everybody agrees that Shelley set that fire right, at this yeah. point. But I'm saying that those situations, like the characteristics that would be with them, aren't that different. It's like, I put you in peril and I like save you. And, you know, him claiming like, oh, I laid you down in the bed and put a blanket on you. Again, like that sounds like a setup to being a good person. But then yet here she is with drugs in her system and a rape kit. So, you know, it's like, it doesn't make sense. But I don't know. I just wish that Jay had given some other compelling facts, something, anything. Look at a picture on my phone. Look here. You can see I was downstairs. Here's the timestamp. Look at the time. Look at the clock on the wall. Whatever. I was outside. I was already home. Look. You know what I'm saying? Just something compelling to make her just say like, well, maybe Adrian didn't have the facts right. But it forces her to doubt her best friend, not doubt that she got raped. That's the problem here. Jay just keeps focusing on that part, like, well, I didn't do it, sort of thing. But not like, well, then who did? Why doesn't he say something like, you know, Jeff was in that room too, and he was making jokes about it. You know, like something to open the door to, it could have been someone else.
That's how it works in a court criminal
of law,
defense.
Right? You have to... Some reasonable amount of doubt.
Right.
That is the story that told. And he never really gives it. He just, if he was in the court of law, he would say, I'm sick of all of you saying I'm guilty. And that'd be his defense. And it's like, crap. I mean, that's not, say something else that makes us feel like you were actually innocent, you know?
Yeah.
So, wow, two gigantic things come of this laughing, kissing, rollerblading.
Which one would you like to attack first? The imprisonment?
The imprisonment.
All right. Well, Eve sets her jaw in a very stern way this week. She's like, I am done looking at this whole mess. When she said, I need a room without any windows, I thought that was because she was going to get to the bottom of this. You know what I mean? The old fashioned way. And what did you think she meant?
I had no idea. This all came out of the blue for me. I did not see this coming. When they said, go get the water, and he went down there and he saw the cot and everything, I said out loud to you, oh, someone else is living down there. Crazy. There's going to be like a third party that we didn't know about that's going to like pop up at the mall.
Earl, the janitor.
That's legit. That's what that was my instant. I did not put the puzzle pieces together at all. So when the door closed, and then I realized that, no, they had set him up like a cot, and this was like where he was to stay now. It worked on me. I was as tricked as Jay. Did it work on you? Were you tricked when he went in there? Did you?
Actually, I was relieved that he was only going to be locked up, not beaten with a hose or something. I saw something bad coming, and this was less bad. I mean, he's an arrogant teenager, but he's not a rapist in my mind. So he doesn't really deserve any of that.
And didn't. We don't believe set the fire, and we don't believe like did probably a lot of the other things.
I believe he's a regular good kid who...
I don't know if he's a good kid. He's, like you said, he's an arrogant kid. He's a snotty, haughty kid, but I think that...
That doesn't make him evil.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. And certainly normal. The other thing that comes of this is Shelly just losing her shit, right? So she decides to go back and tells Gus, like, this is it, man. We have to do something about this. Alex is over there making out with the guy she says is a rapist, you know, and she brings up this whole concept of, why is Alex not taken by the mist? Why is she immune to the mist? Hashtag, like, what's your fucking point? You know, like, you're right that she didn't get taken by the mist. But are you trying to say she's the cause of the mist? She's the controller of the mist? She sicked the mist onto Lila? Like, what are you trying to say? Because, like, there was no actual accusation. Right. It was just stating the obvious. Look, Alex didn't get killed by the mist.
And there's no...
Do I need to say more?
Right, there's
She wasn't killed by the mist.
No rational link between...
Yeah, was like, well, you're right, she wasn't, but... What are you suggesting?
I think it means just not attacked yet. you know what I mean?
But that's not what she's saying. She's trying to say something else, but I don't get what she's trying to say. I mean, she's trying to say something like, I don't know, she's evil. Well, but then the mist is only getting good people. Like, you're not making sense, lady. Like, come on, what are you talking about? So I don't know. It is actually ass backwards here in that the mist is an absolute curiosity at this point. Because if you think about it, you had Natalie standing there and Romanoff standing there, right?
Right.
And they took Romanoff, left Natalie. You have Alex standing there. You have Lila standing there. Lila's the bad person who gets eaten? What? I mean, she was a little child. I find it hard to believe that we're supposed to put her and Romanoff in one category. Mm-hmm. And Link and all of them. Like, so the mist is weirder than that. It's weirder. Its reasons and it's why it takes somebody and not somebody else is more complicated than we're all letting it be.
I don't think it chalks up to good, bad, that kind of thing.
But then you had the trial by ordeal and it was chalked up to like, well, see, Natalie's in the right. And Romanoff's in the wrong. So therefore, the mist takes bad people. I mean, I don't think that's what it is.
No.
And so that's an interesting part, though. Think about that. The churchgoers had the experience that they thought Natalie must be the good person because the bad person was eaten, right? Taken by the mist.
Yeah.
Now you have the mall people. The mist has a whole different agenda because it took the good, innocent kid and left what Shelley is trying to say is the bad person.
Yeah.
So what the hell?
I think it's more like defogging your house for bugs. It doesn't choose the good bugs or the bad bugs. It just kills the bugs.
Freaky.
And some, for some mysterious reason, still make it through. That's all we got at this point.
Intrigue. Okay. So you don't think it has an agenda?
No.
You really think it's just that?
No. I don't. Huh. No.
If it wasn't for Lila, all the rest of this, I would say, no, there's got to be an agenda. There has to be a formula of who's taken in, who's not. But the Lila situation is the thing that is like, but no, because look. And I never got the idea that Benedict was a bad person either. And so I don't know how that would have worked. But everybody else kind of had their own weirdnesses about them, you know, mm-hmm. that you could kind of make sense of like why that person was taken. So I don't know. We ask you guys as listeners, like, what do you guys think? What is the agenda of the mist? Like, is there a formula of who's taken? Or is it like two people stand before you, one gets taken, one doesn't? There's no rhyme or reason
maybe
for it. Please give us some feedback so we have an idea of what you guys are thinking.
Maybe there's some, like, remember we were talking about the idea of thoughts that are just sort of on the top of your mind, like the most ripe thoughts or maybe fears as just being like accessible somehow on a psychic level to the mist, like the bug guy, the moth guy, the Link, the Romanoff, they all have these very surface things that consume them in some way, whether through fear or just obsession, right? And those are the things that come and get them. What would scare a little girl more than some, you know, dark figure sucking out her soul, right? That's kind of more descriptive than most little girls probably think of, but that would definitely fear the dark for sure. Is a common, you know, little kid phobia. So maybe, you know, with Natalie not getting taken, because she's not afraid of it, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Now, Kevin and Alex not getting their turn yet, maybe they just don't have a surface fear or obsession to click with the mist yet. The scene when Shelley comes to Gus and is like, you need to do something about this girl having fun after my girl died. And Gus is like, no.
Paul, dude, okay, hold on. I got to pause you there because there could be other listeners who are like focused on that. It's not that. She's making out with the guy she claims raped her. The girl must be a liar. Okay, that's
all right. Come see, come saw.
It's not Gus, come see, come saw.
Gus still says,
nah.
Shut up. You're starting to scare the other people here with your talk. I'm trying to keep order. Do you believe that her attention then was set to, I'm going to take down Gus? Or do you think it's more like she just found her evidence?
I don't think she was trying to take down Gus. What I think she said was true. I think she was coming to talk to Gus. And she was peeping around in the office and she saw the food and she realized that in her quest to expose a liar, she found another liar. And so now she realized, you know what? He has control over all these other people. The best thing I can do with this information is not try to take down Gus, but to use this information blackmail wise and get him to be the heavy and take out Alex by getting the rest of the group to go along because Gus says. So that's what I think was the whole goal there. I don't think she was going to try to take down Gus. I think she was willing to take down Gus in order to say it works both ways. It's win-win for her. She could say, look, Gus has been telling you that I'm wrong this whole time. He's a liar. Here's all the food wrappers he's been eating. So now you know he's got bad judgment. He's a bad leader. You should listen to me. Now let's go get Alex. Or you flip it the other way and say, fine, Gus, I won't tell your secrets. You will now tell all of them to go get Alex.
I think the
lesson, way you win.
The lesson here has got to be something like you don't back a rat into a corner, right? Because that's what happened. She went alone, backed him into this proverbial corner with blackmail suffered major consequences.
Do you think he meant to kill her, or you think he just meant to like just stop what was happening?
I think it was more like,
I think it was completely accidental. I don't think he intended to kill her.
Well, I think the first part was just animal rage.
Yeah.
And then the next part was like, oh shit, she's going to survive this and tell everybody that I hit her. So I can't have that.
Well, and he pulls a Doc Bailey like, oh my God, look what I found. Help me, help me. Like, perfect. That was the exact Doc Bailey move, right?
Right.
And I have to say, my stomach was like, what? When he blamed Alex, I thought he was going to blame the mist. I thought he was going to say, oh no, you guys, somehow the mist got in here and got her and whatever. I mean, or pull her body, like we're into the bookstore or something where the mist was like around, or down that hallway, or do something, right? Like, I mean, I was really surprised that he said it was Alex. Alex did it. But then when I put together the math of Shelly dead and Jay just MIA, Alex looks horrific.
Or Jay, but yeah.
No, not or Jay. Jay's gone. Jay is locked up somewhere.
Hmm.
So there's nothing... I mean, look, here's Alex. The two people who have spoken or she's spoken badly about or any have any beefs with her, Jay and Shelly, one's dead and one's gone. Who yeah. looks like the worst person in the world? Alex.
Yeah, it's just like these people. I mean, what kind of sheep would look at this 100-pound girl and be like, yeah, she totally took her out.
But here's the thing. They stood up against the glass at the bookstore and watched her not get eaten by the mist and watch everybody else get killed. So I don't think you'd look at her as a 100-pound girl. I think you'd look at her like, what kind of voodoo does this kid know that somehow she's still standing and adult people are dead and this child was eaten in front of all of our eyes?
Man, I just hope for my own self. If the mist ever rolls in when I'm at the mall, I still have some rationality that guides what I do and think.
I think that the moral of this story is for a short period of time, you would. But there'd be enough things that are outside of your ability to make sense of it that you would no longer be able to trust the way you thought before because it doesn't work anymore. I mean, mist doesn't roll in and kill people. You don't see Mrs. Garvey's mouth go wow, 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 wow at you. That doesn't happen. So if nothing is fitting reality anymore, I mean, you would start to get, at the very least, disoriented, and then choices and decisions you thought you would make, they like don't even come into play anymore because it's so different.
See, I'm so focused on the probability, you know, of a zombie apocalypse that it would probably take me a little effort to switch over. Like, I was really counting on the zombies.
Right. It's like, a mist.
Right.
Shit.
Well, I'm totally unprepared for a mist scenario. Well,
and to be honest with you, the mist is always going to be scarier than a zombie for me because there is no way, besides my fan idea, fans would work. Besides,
you just wear like a suit of armor that has fans blowing out in all directions.
You just walk a gigantic fan right in front of you.
Just carve a path.
Yes. That's exactly what you do till you get to the edge of the mist and then run. That's it. That's the whole fucking plan.
You're going to need a lot of, or maybe lawn blower.
I would like a lawnmower or lawn blower, leaf blower would work. As someone else pointed out, if there's a Sears in this place, then there was grills and probably like, I know I really listened to this person and now the more I think about it, like, oh, I don't know if that would have worked.
Well, using grills indoors is not exactly recommended. You
know? Right. But we had talked about the idea of like food and that would they be running out so fast? And part of our issue was like, well, how would they cook it? And the Twitter follower said, well, if they had like any kind of department store that sold a grill, you could get a grill. Now, however, down here, at least in Texas, we're propane people, propane and propane accessories. And so then propane would not be in the mall. That's not where you would get it. They are at least outside. They're located outside the mall in a cage, or you would have to go to like the hardware store still to pick it up. So those are different things that you would purchase. Now, could there be charcoal and like some sort of lighter fluid? Maybe in that camping store, maybe, but none of it would last very long. Not
and the very,
very long.
Real problem is smoke and ventilation, right?
I mean, the mall's pretty big and you do have like two stories and stuff. So I think it probably would dissipate, but you are trying your damnedest to keep the place airtight. So you do have an issue, which I would like to have a moment here about that. Okay, people. I mean, if anybody has ever dealt with water, which is easier to keep out than a gas, okay? Water has a horrible way of getting into every little crack and crevice, and you cannot keep it out, okay?
We just have some experience
dealt with
this.
A freaking leak in the attic, and so I can tell you, it was insane. Do you want to tell how I fixed the leak, Paul?
Caroline had an epiphany of...
So, okay, we had a crack. Okay, so there was a crack in this joint, right? These two pipes that were joining, and there was some sort of crack there. So I yanked the two joints apart so that at least we knew the water was only coming out of one side here.
Mm-hmm. It was the drain from both air conditioning units, not the drip pan drain, but the main drain that I guess takes care of most of the condensation. So there's a constant trickle because air conditioners in Texas run all the time.
So he turned them both off so that now at least we just had to deal with whatever was left
a smaller
that was needing to drain out.
Trickle. And it was getting to be 3 a.m. in the morning.
We were up there sopping it up like every 10 seconds trying to deal with this.
Because we had just replaced a section of ceiling underneath this area without really knowing what the cause was. Now we found the cause and now we needed sleep. Because just sopping up runoff every 5 minutes wasn't gonna do it. So once we turned off the units and had the dripping down to a trickle, we figured out a way to just kind of...
Okay, so here's what we did, people, because we're just going to not leave you in suspense about it anymore. So I was like, all right, what could you possibly put in a pipe that would absorb any amount of moisture? And I was like, I'm going to go find as many tampons as we can find around here, and I'm going to see what we can find. So I jammed that pipe up full of tampons. And
the house was having a heavy flow day.
It was a heavy flow day. And then we, because our kids have special needs, we have all kinds of weird absorbent diapers and whatnot, not kind of things. So we found a gigantic diaper and put it underneath, and... It held. We slept for like 3 or 4 hours and not a drip got out of that pipe. And the little bit that did, it filled up that diaper. That diaper was full, but it worked, everybody. I felt like that is proof positive that you and I would make it through the apocalyptic situation that's coming, because we would be resourceful, Paul. We would jam those tampons in the pipe. We would put the adult diaper underneath the thing and we would get some rest.
We would have a go bag just dedicated to tampons,
to dealing with leaks. Right. Okay, but what was the whole point of that? The whole point of that is that's what it took to get rid of a tiny trickle of water. This is a gigantic ongoing pressure mist situation that is constantly trying to get into things. They are keeping it out with like the lamest thing. The mall has those rubber seals. I'm good with that. But as we see when we go over to Adrian's house, they keep it out with like the regular old garage, like rickety old wooden door, you know, pull down door for the garage.
Yeah.
There is no effing way that thing is watertight, much less gas tight.
That's ridiculous. We are supposed to just suspend disbelief because there have been plenty of doors where you can see the daylight coming through.
Yes.
That, guess what? Gas comes through those gaps.
So I just had to have a minute there of being like a little like, gah, because I know I'm with you and we have to be cool about those things. But it was the garage door this time that really just got me, that I was like, God damn, come on. I mean, that thing was like the saddest, ricketyest shed pull down door I ever saw. It was so old. There is absolutely no way it would keep any mist out. It was ridiculous.
Speaking of Adrian's house, so did you buy the whole reason Adrian said that they needed to stop at his house?
Well, from what I remember, he said he wanted to say goodbye, basically, and check in on them. Is this what you're remembering? And then the rest of the group kind of rationalized the stop by saying, well, we need to siphon gas, and his dad, mom has a car, so this makes sense. We can do this.
I think it should be pointed out, as a person who watches a lot of post-apocalyptic TV, that I don't think you can actually siphon gas from modern vehicles. I think that there are things in place to keep that from happening. So unless his dad has like a old Chevelle in the garage or something.
I did not note a Chevelle.
I don't think that that's going to work.
Well, it does work.
For TV, but, you know.
Yeah. And you know what? Besides just that, other fluids are flowing daily.
Yeah, like the estrogenical kinds.
All the hormones are flowing in this one. So Jonah and Mia are in charge of going to the garage and getting said gas. But while they have time to kill, they decide just to get up on each other, which this is classic young person having sex horror movie. No, no. This is the perfect time when the mist crawls into your eye sockets or something. You don't do it, right? Normally on the cot, then Jason like sticks the knife directly through both of your bodies simultaneously.
Yeah, that's
it happens
move.
All the time, people. I cannot stress this enough. If you're in a dangerous situation, really, really encourage you to abstain.
Well, you know, they do have a very solid garage door between them and the mist.
Right. We went over that already. So we know it's just like a paper bag dangling there. But oh well, whatever. We're going to ignore it. What do you think about this idea that Jonah and Mia have now taken this relationship to the next level, Paul?
Again, with most things in this show, it moved way faster than people would actually do. I mean, I got to think that if I'm an amnesiac, I'm going to be the most tentative guy about everything. Would I do that? Does that seem right? Am I going to do that? That doesn't seem right.
Yeah, but Paul, you know, he had an opportunity to get with this lady. So
right.
My whole thing is I just think that in the whole, like, you'd be wanting to have a lookout and so much weird shit's been happening. I don't know. I don't see it happening, but it did. So obviously now we're going to have a lot of, I think, awkwardness between them moving forward.
Oh, you think it's going to be like that?
What do you think?
I think it's going to be more of that kind of attachment kind of stuff that you might see where, you know, it's like, oh, I got to go back for her or I got to go back for him or whatever. That kind of thing that might, you know, eventually get them both killed or something like that.
Bottom line, sex in the apocalypse equal trouble. It's just trouble. That's all I'm saying. So let's move on to Adrian and Kevin. They decide that they are going to go to Adrian's house. They're in the house proper, right?
Yeah.
Kev's going to wait outside for a while and be with the car, you know, which is fair. That's a smart idea. And Adrian's going to go inside. And I believe the first initial intent was just to check on his parents. That was the deal. Not necessarily knowing if they were alive, dead, or what. Were you surprised to see the father eating dinner at the table?
Yeah, especially given everything else that goes down. The dude's just sitting there like having soup or something. It's like something very incongruous about the idea of having your dead wife hanging out on the couch and you're just sitting at the table like you would any other day as if she had just served you the soup, you know?
This is a strange glimpse into our household.
Well, let me tell you, if you're dead on the couch.
I don't serve any soup, y'all. Just let you know, I don't serve anything for dinner. It's a total group situation. But
if you're dead
on
the couch, I might be eating in the bed or something like that, okay?
The point is that you're not going to eat in the same open space as my decaying bod.
Yes, there's that element, but it's more like just the upside downness of the whole thing. You know, I just don't know that I might even have to just leave that place.
Remind me, Paul, was there electricity at his house? Because I think there was. I don't think that they were searching through stuff with flashlights or anything.
They weren't in the complete dark, but, you know, if you had gas, you might be okay for cooking things.
No. I don't mean that. I mean lights. I mean, he was sitting at the table. He was lit up. He wasn't eating by candlelight. No one was using a flashlight inside Adrian's house.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, there's something a little off about that. I'm not sure what.
Bright enough to see.
Bright enough for him to have a shotgun and all these different things go on. So, yeah. All right. So let's get down to this. There's a lot of abuse that has clearly gone on in Adrian's household. We know that they had emotionally and verbally abused Adrian all these years, but definitely it seemed that I had a real question mark about whether the dad beat on the mom.
Oh, me too. Because the story that he gives about the birds appearing and just pecking her to death. I mean, he had peck marks on himself.
Well,
but
he
also
scratch
had
marks.
Right. He had the same kind of things that would happen if you attacked a woman and she scratched at your face.
Yeah, they're called like defense wounds or something like that, right?
Yes.
I mean, I felt like that definitely she had marks on her that seemed weird. He had marks on him. Now, I have zero experience with bird attacks. I don't know what those injuries would exactly look like. Her eyes were clearly like pecked out. But the way that we've seen so many different scenarios, like how when Mia went back to her house and she had to deal with her dead mom, I'm so confused about whether that was truly the dad unaffected by the mist. The mom clearly was like lifeless and dead. But I don't know that the dad was like actually his regular self.
Yeah, I think he was. I mean, I think he demonstrated that he was definitely an asshole toward Adrian.
Yeah, but the mother of Mia acted so weird too, and we knew she was not there. So it's, I don't know, like, I'm just uncertain. At least there's no consistency for, like, what this looks like. I mean, that same kind of weird parent interactions were going on, I guess, where she was, like, attacking her.
Mia's house was filled with the mist.
That's true. That's true. And Adrian's house is not, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It is airtight.
Of course. Right.
The entire breakdown here where the dad just decides to go bananas and tell Adrian the entire reason why the mom has had such a difficult time and is on different types of medications and basically is like pulled away from the family is not because the dad is an abusive asshole, but is because she is trying to deal with Adrian's sexuality and sort of what the father was sort of equating as just sort of like alternative lifestyle. Like not just the fact that he's gay, but he wears eyeliner and he chooses to be sort of more just an alternative lifestyle, generally speaking.
That story could be very true. You know, moms have a great reputation for putting on a very strong face for their kids. You know what I mean? So for Adrian to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. It could be that the mom is dying on the inside, but doesn't show it to her kid.
As watchers, why do we feel like we had to go through this? Was it simply to understand why Adrian is as twisted up as he is? Because there was zero reason at that point in time for a father to be that cruel to Adrian. I mean, the mother is dead. Whatever her challenges were, whatever her crosses she was bearing all those years, means nothing at this point, you know? I mean, she's gone. So why do this to Adrian? Why tear him apart?
Yeah, you're right. It does seem like the dad shifted into like this all or nothing, like, well, I'm probably never going to see you again anyway kind of mode, you know? But there's, like we've said all along, the mist could just roll out again. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, if you engage with a conversation with another person, family member, that includes things like, you're right, I don't love you and I never have.
And your mother never loved you. And like, you were the reason why she was like completely falling apart. I don't know. It was unlike any other interaction we've had so far. And so it was very unique. I'm not 100% sure why we had to have it, except for it clearly illustrated that Adrian was, I'm going to say, probably a product of his environment in terms of how to treat people and how to be manipulative and how to, you know, basically survive. He was doing things he needed to do to survive. And so, you know, then we get into this whole conversation with Kevin, right? So he blows his father away, right, with the shotgun. And that lures Kevin into running into the house to find out what happened.
And he finds this mess, you know, Adrian has cut himself to try to be like, well, he came at me. So, you know, this conveniently placed shotgun was just handy enough for me to blow my dad away. Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, I'm telling you that if I'm in a position like that, I'm not shooting my dad, but if I was Adrian, okay, there's no way I would cut myself. I've already been at the hospital. I already know there's no supplies. There's no way. I don't care. I wouldn't. I would just, if I shot my dad, I shot my dad. And I would just be like, he came at me, he pushed me, whatever. I don't care. I would say these, but I would never create a wound like that.
No, I'm chicken never. Also.
Well, it made no sense. There was no chance for fixing it. He had already come from the hospital. He knew there was no help there. Gross. So here we have Kevin run to the bathroom. And I believe Adrian at this point knows what he's going to see in that bathroom medicine cabinet. And he starts off with that whole, promise me that I'll always be a part of your family. What did you think about that?
Everything that happened with regard to that was perfectly realistic. Like, you could see that there was this kid who felt like he needed to kill his dad. And you knew things were bad with his dad. And then he starts saying that he needs a family. And as a dad, I can kind of rationalize the idea that you could want to take this young person under your wing, but there is a ceiling to what a non-family member can actually achieve in my book and in Kevin's by the looks of things also. And that is not the full family status there's
well, and even still, honorary, Paul, I mean, but I appreciate what you're saying, but I don't even care if he was blood relative. I mean, there are certain circumstances that are going to throw you out of the family, regardless of your status.
The rapiness,
raping a fellow family member. I mean, I think it makes it even worse that he's like, I'm in the family. Oh yeah, I raped a family member then. Oh shit. Like, not cool at all. The entire part where they actually revealed that the pills were his mom's and that they were in that medicine cabinet. Oh my God. It was the first time that I actually put the puzzle pieces together that, yes, I thought Adrian had raped her the entire time. There was no part about this that I ever thought it was Jay. I always thought it was Adrian. However, I never gave him the level of premeditation to have brought the pills.
Yeah.
And have actually planned to rape her that night.
I thought it was also just a crime of convenience also.
Exactly. And so even though I knew what those pills were and I knew that they had been found in her system, I was really, it was like a kick in the stomach, even though I knew he had done it the whole time, that he had actually brought those pills that night in order to rape Alex. Whole other story for me. That made Adrian a billion times worse. And now Kevin is in the position of being like, there's nothing I can do but kill you here, Adrian. And everything played out as we said it would. Kevin had already had the earlier encounter with Nash. He stepped in, took the bullet for Adrian. And now he realizes Adrian's actually the perpetrator and he could have let him be beat to death by Nash.
If you think about the way the party went, Adrian was supposed to be her wingman for kind of going to this party that she wasn't supposed to get in trouble at, even though if her mom found out she would be in trouble, but she wasn't going there to, you know, to get riggedy wrecked.
Well, she said, I don't want to drink. And he said, you don't want to be rude.
Right.
And he kicked one back.
That's what I was getting at. Like he had his agenda that he worked in, even though he flew in under false colors, basically.
So, okay. So then we have this interaction between Kevin and Adrian where Adrian's like, that's it. Like, I'm going to have to kill Kevin as well. And that last moment there where we watched it a couple of times. And so we think we saw.
Yeah, it was Kevin wasn't going to go out on his knees to this bitch ass guy who raped his daughter. So he jumps up and knocks the shotgun aside, which that he fires at that point, but he follows through with the butt and knocks him out with the butt of the rifle, of the shotgun.
So we're gonna put it down in our notebook that Kevin is alive, knocked yeah. out, but alive.
Yes.
And, which I just, oh my God, I don't know how this is going to go down. So we have Kevin laying inside. Outside in the car, we have Jonah and Mia waiting.
And Vic.
However, yes, we have Vic, who came running up while Kevin was waiting. I had no earthly idea who that was when he came running up to the car, trying to convince Kevin to let him in. I'm like, who is this? Why do you think they brought Vic back into the scene?
At first, I thought he was brought to kind of just increase the tension about the urgency needing to get to the mall. But in thinking about it, that was always the mission. And we didn't need that. So now I'm thinking we know that he and his coworker had keys to open up that back door where they performed their little experiment. So now I'm thinking maybe he's their way in through a secret way.
I agree. Not only their way in, but also I think that he's going to know other things about the mall, being a shop owner in the mall. And, you know, as opposed to a regular mall shopper, he would be able to, you know, maybe know some of those, you know, those back corridors, like where they put the trash out and stuff through there where they don't walk through the middle of the mall.
Yeah.
Like things like that, that like I would think the average shopper wouldn't know. Now, you know, Gus is still around and the security guard's still around, but Vic is still like a really good add to the team in terms of knowing anything of who's even at the mall and what's even going on. And he would have actually been around for Arrowhead talk and military talk and all this, you know?
But he would have left right at the split.
Yeah. So, but he would have a ton of information as to like what's going on and who these different factions are. So I liked his ad. I was surprised to see him. But I do think it brings like another cool layer to the mix here.
So Adrian gets in there and he starts with the no, don't go in the house.
Did you like his reason, how he got them to not go?
What did he say?
So he says, we have to get to the mall. My like dying promise to him, I promised that we would get to Eve and Alex. So we have to go right now. We cannot go back in there. And that is the thing that kind of pulled Jonah and Mia back, like, oh, well, if it was like your promise to him, and well, we better get going. However, you rightly pointed out, we did not see them drive the car away.
No, we only saw Mia get into the driver's seat and look very much like undecided about what to do next, because they'd come this far. So there's got to be just that little bit of camaraderie that I don't know if they're just going to ditch him just on the word of this kid who, I mean, it's not like she and Adrian have a lot of connection. You know what I mean? They right. kind of don't like each other that much.
Right. Well, they definitely have rightful suspicion of one another. So what do you think about moving on to next week? We definitely know the churchgoers are on the way to the mall. Kevin's either going to stumble out in time for Mia to see, or Mia might start to go. But I feel like somehow she's going to pull back. Like maybe it'll be one of those things where he starts to go and then like Kevin's body like comes over the windshield kind of thing, you know, like a real like horror movie, like smack on the windshield, you know.
Or you could even see he with the shotgun is the king of the car. You know what I mean? Like they may see Kevin, but he may say,
who's he?
Anyone in the car may say that there's Kevin, go back. And he may say,
who's he?
Adrian. Adrian may pull out the shotgun and be like, keep going.
We're not going back.
Right.
Which is crazy. Like, what would Adrian be rushing? I mean, it's all crazy. It's all crazy. Do you think there's some shot Adrian might just like, I shouldn't have said shot. Some chance Adrian might put the gun to his head?
No, 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 no. He suffered through a lot to be the guy that he is already. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But how does he get through this at this point?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't know that he necessarily does. If the mist doesn't clear out in the next two episodes, I'm not anticipating season two. So I need some kind of payoff and offing Adrian, I guess.
Do you think Kevin's going to kill him? You don't think he's going to kill himself? But I think he's dead. Like, I think he's a goner. I think his story has played out, I think, almost to its entirety. I think that, of course, there still has to be the Alex, Adrian, Jay moment. That has to happen at the mall, right?
What confuses things at the mall that we forget is that Eve has that gun and no one else does. You know what I mean? No matter what happens, if they storm the loading dock looking for food, or if Adrian and Eve somehow confront each other with Kevin showing up and saying, he raped her, you know, like Eve still has that gun. So things could go pretty sideways on Adrian in a number of ways.
I like the idea of Eve being the shooter. I like that.
I think that's perfectly justified, and she's definitely got the steely, you know,
resolve at this
right,
point.
Right, yeah, to definitely do it. I mean, she was, she would do it if it was Jay, or she, no, that's not true. I think she could
do it. Okay, so I look forward to next week.
Me too. This podcast was brought to you in partnership with 3ifbyspace.net. And the reviews written there by Michelle Harvey. Visit the website 3ifbyspace.net. That's 3 the word, threefbyspace.net for all kinds of science fiction news and updates. Thanks. Catch us on iTunes or your preferred podcast software. Our website, dailyreview.com. That's dailyreview.com. Facebook or Twitter or wherever you find us. Please leave us a comment and a rating to let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for listening, pod people. Thanks for listening to my mom and dad.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Just go home, folks.